Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Well, hello again, Taylor.
I'm looking at you.
Yeah. We're recording in the same space. That's wild.
IRL.
IRL.
Yeah, that's what the kids say. I'm seeing you, Earl.
Well, that's right. That's what they say. Yeah, I've got a... We are vaccinated, and Dad is here visiting me in New York City, which has been exciting.
So we decided to just do a live one right here together. Yeah. Makes it easier.
There you go. So any lag or oddness is not, we can't blame it on the recording. That's just us.
Just us. We're just lagging.
Lagging and awkward. Yeah, that's fair.
It's been a week long.
You're lagging, I'm awkward. That's.
It's been a week long sampling the drink fair.
Yes.
So, you know, no wonder we're lagging.
Yeah. Well, it's the good thing, you know, like a lot of places aren't open for indoor seating yet, or if they are, they're at reduced capacity, but everywhere has takeout programs and you know, samplers for the road. So we can
Wow, and a lot of outdoor seating in New York, too.
Yes, yes.
Outdoor seating everywhere they have built out.
Yeah.
It really makes it interesting.
So it's pretty, you know, I don't want to encourage... do not descend on the city en masse to drink cocktails yet. It's better that everybody be safe and be cautious. But
yeah, just send me all your cocktails.
There you go. Yeah. But one bar that we did venture to visit while Dad was here was the Dead Rabbit for Easter Sunday. That seemed appropriate.
How ironic is that?
Right. Where else are you going to go?
The Dead Rabbit for Easter. He wasn't very hoppy.
Mm. It was the one place that I wanted us to be able to check out, and for good reason. It's one of my favorite cocktail bars in the city.
I'm glad you did. It's one I'll never forget.
I don't think I'm alone in that idea. I think it's one of the world's favorite cocktail bars. I think it's safe to say. And you know, we've lost a lot of really iconic, amazing, I would say, essential bars in New York during COVID. And this is definitely a place that I was glad survived. I was glad found a way to make it work. They did a lot of smart branding and you know, differentiating their portfolio to get through it. But
yeah, they got some really neat merch.
Yeah, they got some cool merch, which we'll get into a little bit later. But I thought, you know, like we could just pay homage to a really essential New York bar, really iconic on the cocktail scene.
With an authentic Irish background.
Yes. So in celebration of Easter, we're gonna tell you all about the Dead Rabbit so that when you are safely vaccinated and when travel is safer, you should come to New York and try it out or check out some of their merch, buy some of their books. They have amazing cocktail books. Something to encourage you to invest in one of, I would say mine, but now I would say our favorite bars.
Yeah. If you come to New York, you have definitely got to put this place on your list of somewhere to go visit.
All right. So the Dead Rabbit, it's a bar in the Financial District, Tribeca, sort of lower Manhattan area. It's on Water Street. And it is the creation of two great Irish barmen by the name of Sean Muldoon and Jack McGarry. Now, a bit about each of them. So, Sean Muldoon up first. He grew up in Ardoyne, which is a neighborhood sort of in northern Belfast, so in Ireland, Northern Ireland. And he came of age in the 90s, so his youth was, of course, impacted by the Troubles, the tumultuous and violent period of conflict that plagued Northern Ireland, among other places. And he had a lot of brushes with violence in his youth that led him to sort of idealize employment that would take him away from his home.
Mm-hmm.
He considered joining the military. He even interviewed with like the like foreign military forces. He was like trying to find a way to get away from it. Ultimately, he ended up working in tending bar as a young adult just to sort of pay the bills while he figured himself out. He had a brief dalliance with like a musical career, actually. Like he recorded an album. That
with,
he financed
with Bono
himself.
Or something?
No, no. It was not every Irish person records with Bono.
I thought they all know each other.
No, he recorded an album, and it's apparently like if you're like a true cocktail geek, like you really, really are a fan of cocktail culture, you figure out how to get a copy of Sean Muldoon's album. I don't know. I'd be down for. But I don't want to like understate, like even one of his early gigs was at a bar that was kind of in a particularly tumultuous area of his hometown. And like there was like a shooting at his bar that, you know, kind of scarred him for a long time, like was very impactful, made him he asked to have someone to close with after that at his bar so he wouldn't have to close alone. And his owners refused. And that's why he quit that job, because he just didn't feel safe. So, you know. That shaped his young life and definitely led him to decide that he wanted to develop strengths and knowledge that could support him through life and help him get jobs wherever he wanted to go. You know, he wanted to have sustainable employment and be able to leave, basically.
So come to New York, the safest city in the world, where they don't have shootings in bars.
That's a while off. Okay. Yeah, then that's not where he went.
Okay.
No, but like literally, they nicknamed this bar that he worked at the Sitting Duck, and then it turned out to be like exactly accurate, hauntingly accurate. But no, he turned, you know, the bad into the good. He dedicated himself to the study of cocktail culture, of cocktail history. You know, like just really just became a like dedicated student of cocktail culture while he was working his way around different bar rooms, kind of landing on the radar of a lot of prominent bar people. He traveled around. He studied bar programs in London. He worked on cruise ships. He competed in various cocktail competitions. Like, he definitely was making himself into the artist he would become very with a lot of conviction. It was actually return to his home in Belfast that would actually give him the grounds to where he really proved himself. There was this merchant hotel in Belfast, which is a beautiful hotel. They were looking for somebody to run their hotel bar, a new hotel bar that was launching. And he was chosen for it, and he made a name for himself there. He had an incredibly focused, like, fresh ingredient, perfect understanding of classic cocktail structures. He's one of those people that really, I mean, I would say he's the guy that made ice an important element of cocktails. Like, it's amazing hearing about how he just like devoted all of these fridges in his basement to understanding how ice froze and how you could get the impurities out of it and what temperature it was right to like harvest your ice to cut down into your, whether you want blocks or shaved ice. Like, he made a whole study of just ice.
I never knew ice had that much science behind it. It's just frozen water.
No, but ice is, I mean, if you think about it, ice is, like, think about that giant hunk of ice that sits in your glass. Of course that's going to impact your flavor. Sometimes, I mean, depending on how much ice you got in your glass, it's 50% ice, 50% cocktail. And the idea that you just make whatever ice or have it sit wherever and ice picks up flavors, like, he was one of the first people to really understand the connection between a good cocktail and good ice. And I mean, there's like, you know, I think it's not me. The whole bar world holds to high esteem Japanese bartenders and their appreciation of ice. And it's some of the earliest like originators of the Japanese cocktail scene actually went to the merchant in Belfast, saw what Muldoon was doing with ice, and said, that's the best ice program in the world.
You know, I did notice when I saw the video of them preparing some cocktails that they didn't just get like ice cubes out of the machine or something like that, that they had these big blocks of ice, and they would have like a chisel type thing, and they would chisel their ice into pieces that they would use. So they were all broken from much bigger pieces, kind of like Kristoff in Frozen.
Yes,
that's what they reminded me of.
They harvested their own ice. Well, I mean, that's like, there's a lot. I'm almost afraid of that knowledge, because I feel like It's so easy to ignore the importance of ice, but it does make a lot of sense when you think about it. And then when you're at a place that respects it, like the drinks do taste differently, mm-hmm. you know? And really, it's 50% of your cocktail sometimes is ice. Like, of course that matters.
True.
But I mean, that was, you know, the ice was a big emphasis on his. He had a smart way of categorizing cocktails via like the time they were made, their categories. He just had a brilliant mind for understanding how not only just to make drinks, but how to make a menu. Like mm-hmm. when we design menus now, like that formula of like understanding structures, understanding palettes and breaking them into a cohesive menu and not sticking to like, oh, I do pre-prohibition cocktails or, oh, I do tiki cocktails or, oh, I do this. Like he had representation of drinks all throughout the timeline of cocktail culture, and he had them organized in a comprehensive way, and that drew international acclaim. Like he had dudes like Gaz Regan and like David Wondrich bellying up to his bar in Belfast to like try his menu, and these are some of the most important minds in cocktail culture at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it, to the surprise of no one, he like his bar menu became like the thing, like just impressive to everybody. Everybody wanted to work for him. Somebody that wanted to work for him was a talented young bartender in Belfast by the name of Jack McGarry, our other eventual founder of Dead Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Jack McGarry was a little younger than him. He began bartending before he'd be legal to drink in much of the world. And, you know, like he was also a student of cocktail history. He was
right.
like deeply invested in classic cocktail manuals, classic cocktail structures, and he kind of had to work to get his recognition from Muldoon. You know, he had to kind of prove himself. I mean, he was still so young. Like, we're talking about like a 19-year-old being like, yeah, let me work for you at your amazing bar. But he proved himself. He was brought on originally as like a trainee, just like, you know, you work for free, you get, you know, you might get tips or something. But very quickly, in a matter of a few menus, worked himself up to Muldoon's like right-hand man, like lead bartender, co-creator on his menus. And when the two of them came together, it was really just sort of magical.
Well, what I saw it as is Muldoon was like, he saw the science in it and McGarry saw the art in it. Muldoon saw this as a way out of his situation. He did not have a natural calling to be a bartender and create drinks, but he saw that as an opportunity. And he studied his ass off and got really good at it and understood how all that worked and took the time to learn all things. Whereas, and he said by his own admission, he never took a drink of anything until he was 21.
Yeah.
So he obviously didn't mix any drinks or anything until after he was 21 because he wasn't involved in it. You can't mix good drinks if you don't taste them. You got to know what they taste like. Now, McGarry, he was different. He was mixing drinks when he was 16 years old. And they said, did you drink before you were 21? And he just laughed. But he had a natural talent for it. So it was Muldoon's science and McGarry's art combined together is, I think, what made it lift off.
I think that's a beautiful way of putting it. And I agree with that. Because I think ultimately, like, Muldoon understood the business a lot more. But McGarry was cocktailer's cocktailer. Like he understood how to make drinks work. And I mean, it was a winning combination because in 2010, the Merchant won Best Bar in the World at the Tales of the Cocktail. This is just to understand what Tales of the Cocktail is, especially if you're from an international place. Tales of the Cocktail happens in NOLA every year. It's an international bartending competition. They give awards for best bartenders, best bar team, best bar program, best bar menus. It's really, I would say it's the preeminent like bar award in the world. But for decades, it was dominated by New York bars. I mean, we're talking about cocktail revival that happened, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. It was so dominated by New York City bars that they actually made a second category to say best bar in New York to maybe try to draw like some of the awards away. And all that meant was New York dominated two categories. Then New York was winning both, best bar in the world, best bar in New York. So for these, you know, Irish boys to come in and win best bar in the world
in Belfast.
Yeah, it was a big deal. Like it was an, and I don't want to say it was an upset. I think that need, I think that the international bar world is pretty supportive of itself, but like, it was definitely a big change of pace and something that was very celebrated in the international community.
So then they decided the only way to top that is to go to New York and win it again there with a new bar.
Exactly. I do want to say, I thought this was cute. So Muldoon and McGarry, they didn't find out until after they were already working together that they grew up in the same neighborhood. And it was really like, so Muldoon kind of held off on hiring McGarry because he was young and he wanted him to prove himself. And then finally he was like, okay, I'm going to hire him. I'm going to bring him on. And McGarry came up to thank Muldoon at a bar they were both at, just say thank you for bringing me on. And Muldoon was there with some friends, and his friends were like, oh, wait, you know that kid, right? That kid grew up with us. He's like, what do you mean? So it's like, Muldoon would play like street ball with some friends. And, you know, like game on, game off. Like, you got to pause your game if a car goes by or if like somebody bikes by. So apparently one of the common game off, like, people that would bike by that they'd have to stop playing for was the elder Jack McGarry, and he would have his little infant son in the back of his bike, and it was young Jack McGarry that would eventually work for Muldoon. So they grew up in the same neighborhood. they were young children in the same place, but he didn't realize that until after he'd already hired him.
McGarry was just younger.
Yeah, he was just a baby. So yeah. he didn't know he'd met the baby Jack McGarry.
He was sitting in the infant seat on the back of the bike drinking.
Yeah, well, milk, juice, maybe
Irish milk.
Yes, Guinness.
It's a Guinness. That's fine, mother's yeah. milk.
But yes, after they won Tales of the Cocktail for their bar in Belfast, what else would you do other than just go to New York and win it there? Just
That's right.
really prove
just
yourself.
Just to prove because you can.
So they made the plan to go to New York and open a bar. And the idea behind the bar, I think, was really iconic. And I mean, it's still what the bar is, because and they were Muldoon was kind of influenced actually by the American tourists that came to Belfast. So what Muldoon noticed is that when he had American tourists at the Merchant, they were just as excited to have amazing, complex, like high end cocktails at his bar as they were to go down the street to like the neighborhood pub, which was the Duke of York, which was very much a laid back like Irish pub. And that they loved both experiences. And so he thought, well, why don't we combine these both for New York City? Like, why don't we bring a bar that has all of the laid-back charm of an Irish pub, but all of the, like, high-end knowledge that we've developed in the cocktail world? And, I mean, for the time period, this is really, like, revolutionary. Because a lot of the bars, even to this day, that we hold up as the iconic cocktail bars of like the cocktail reinvention in New York, they're great, but they're very pretentious places, you know? Like, you don't feel right rolling up to Death & Co. and ordering a beer, or like, you know, like Angel's Share and ordering a beer. They're beautiful places, but you think you need to go and dress really well. You know, you're there for the cocktails. It's very reverent. It's very respectful. And that idea of taking that knowledge but putting it in a place that feels like you can kick back and relax and listen to good music, and like, that is a brilliant idea.
Well, the Dead Rabbit does well with that, because one of the first things I noticed when we walked in the door is there's sawdust spread on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole bar all around is sawdust on the floor. Then the other thing they said, they wanted it to be like home, and the thing that reminded them of home was family and friends. So when you look up in the rafters, because it's kind of a low ceiling in there, but stapled up into all the rafters are all their family and friends pictures from back home. And mm-hmm. these are actual pictures. They can point out, there's my dad, there's my grandpa, there's Uncle Jim that lived down the street, you know, that's all family and friends that are up there on these pictures that are up through there. And you could spend hours just looking at these pictures and the people that they knew while they were in Belfast.
Yeah. Well, and the design is, it is designed to feel that way, but it also is authentic in mm-hmm. that these are people that know what an authentic Irish pub feels like, mm-hmm. a neighborhood bar feels like, and they have replicated that, but like with their real lives. So like it's really a unique experience. When they first came to New York, it was a bit of a struggle for them. You know, I think they had a lot of people, especially after winning the Tales of the Cocktail, they had a lot of people like, come to New York, you'll be big, you'll open a bar, it'll be 6 months, you'll be huge. Like, So Muldoon came to New York. McGarry decided to, like, while the bar was getting set up, work a stint at the Milk and Honey in London. So he was going to work a little while in London, kind of, you know, learn some other bar programs while Muldoon was building at the bar. But of course, as things happen in New York and in America, I think, just opening a business, like, everything took 1,000 times longer. A lot of those people that encouraged them and offered them money evaporated. So the whole process stressed, like, both of them out and just stretched incredibly long. Finding the name came quickly. They knew what their bar wanted to be named, and I think this is an interesting part of their history. Obviously both of them were students of history. They liked researching what they were going to do, so they both delved a lot into Irish people in America, and, you know, trying to find some points of contact there. And in their research, they came across the Dead Rabbits, which were a gang of New York.
And they were an Irish gang that operated in the Five Points area of New York. Mm-hmm. And so they knew that they wanted to put their bar down in that same general area.
Yeah, so it's like Lower Manhattan, like bound by like Center Street, Bowery to the east, Canal Street to the north, Park Road to the south. So kind of like if you've ever been to New York, it's like lower Fidei, like below Canal. Yeah, so they had discovered this history in America of this Irish gang, the Dead Rabbits, and I mean, I think the Dead Rabbits, they were a lot of young, like first generation Irishmen, and they had like a lot of, you know, street fighting with more nationalist gangs like the Bowery Boys, which were claimed to be like Americans fighting against immigrants, even though they were probably at best second generation Americans. And then, you know, they fought against the draft. You know, they fought against this turnaround of like, welcome to America, go fight for us now. But like, you know, like don't have any citizenship until you do. Like they fought against like housing conditions, which were absolutely treacherous in the Five Points. So they were a gang. But they also were fighting, I think, on the right side.
Yeah, from the 1830s up through about 1860s. Mm-hmm. And they were in at the time, the most destitute. It was filled with disease and just rampant poverty. And all the Irish people, all they had was each other.
Yeah.
I mean, basically living in this area. And still, though, this gang, the Bowery Boys, they wanted to come run them out in the name of America and being anti-immigrant. And they drew the line at Paradise Square. That was where the Irish claimed this was our territory, and the Bowery Boys wanted to take it from them. And that's, if any of this sounds familiar at all to you, then you may have seen the Gangs of New York.
Yes. So that's what, yeah, the Gangs of New York, 2002. Oh, okay.
Remember we said it was almost 20 years old.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Martin Scorsese movie about early gangs in New York. That does feature the Dead Rabbits. Leonardo DiCaprio was not the leader of the Dead Rabbits.
He became the leader of the Dead Rabbits.
Well, in the later movie, yes. Yeah. But not actually.
Not in real life.
The actual leader of the Dead Rabbits was a man by the name of John Old Smoke Morrissey. And John was born in Tipperary in Ireland. He came over as a young child to New York. He moved to New York City when he was 18. He made a name for himself as a bare-knuckle boxer. Before eventually taking over leadership of the Dead Rabbits. And, you know, if you've seen the movie, you might have heard of William Bill the Butcher Poole. That was a real character. That was the leader of the Bowery Boys. Also, not Daniel Day-Lewis, but like a real man. And he did, like, regularly get into fisticuffs with the Dead Rabbits.
Mm-hmm. And at William Morrissey, not only did he lead the Dead Rabbits, but eventually he became a congressman and then a senator, mm-hmm, from New York.
Yeah.
So he kind of walked the straight and narrow there after a while, I guess. But the Bowery Boys also, the way they kind of hid their way in, a lot of times, they were all the firemen in that area. So the fire trucks would come in with all the firemen on there, and they'd end up beating up the dead rabbit guys and robbing from the houses that were on fire and stuff. That's what
I'm saying. Well, and you know, the dead rabbits got their name, which I think is, you know, good to know for the bar too. It's from there was like some like earlier gangs where somebody threw a dead rabbit down as sort of a bad omen. And that's what that was taken as. It's like a dead rabbit is a bad omen. So that's where they got their name from.
Mm-hmm.
They did, the dead rabbits did eventually lead to the death of Bill the Butcher. Morrissey got in a scuffle with him one night that didn't result in either of their deaths. Like, he pulled a gun, Bill the Butcher pulled a knife, the police broke it up. And then later, some associates of the Dead Rabbit showed up and shot Poole, who later died from his injuries. His last words were something like, "I die an American." Like, okay, sure.
But what actually turned the tide in favor of the Irish, where they, you know, kind of were able to dig their way out of there, was the potato famine that was taking place in Ireland. Because the Irish were abandoning Ireland because they were all starving to death. So they were coming to America, like a million of them a month. So, and most of them were coming in to the seaports along the East Coast, and they were filling in down through Boston and into New York. So the Irish had a constant influx of new recruits coming in. So they eventually outnumbered the Bowery Boys, and that's how they finally were able to push back and overcome.
Well, and like their vote became very powerful. Being able to have the Irish vote became like an important, that was part of why Morrissey got elected, was because he had the Irish vote behind him. And right. They, you know, people in charge, the smart politicians, whatever your immigrant status was, realized the power of the Irish vote and started courting it specifically and mm-hmm. answering Irish needs, because there were so many Irish people in America.
Right.
So that was powerful. Mm-hmm. Morrissey, so John Old Smoke Morrissey is called, there have been cocktails on the Dead Rabbit menu called the Old Smoke, and Old Smoke is named because in a bar fight, John Morrissey was thrown against an open coal stove and had his entire back burnt with coals, hot coals, and mm-hmm. continued to fight and defeat his opponent after being laid upon a coal stove. So that's where that nickname comes from.
On top of Old Smokey.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. But then goes on to be he was first a New York senator, and then he went on to be a U.S. member of the U.S. House of Representatives. So that was the inspiration for the name of Dead Rabbit. They kind of knew that going in, that was going to be where they were coming from. And then the location took a lot longer for them to find. For a long time, Muldoon was shopping around in more, I guess more cocktail bar friendly areas of New York. East Village, Lower East Side, like Chelsea. And it took him a while to decide upon the location on Water Street. And a lot of people thought it was a bad idea, because if we went down there, you know, it's not the super accessible, like, it's not Restaurant Mile. It's very kind of cut off on its own. A lot of
big business buildings everywhere. Yeah. These big tall skies. There's a big Verizon building and several financial buildings and things like that. So there's not a lot of foot traffic, you wouldn't think, down there in the evenings or anything, because there's not places to go visit much of.
And it's not crazy far from a lot of those things. But you really, it's a difference between being on a popular walkway and hoping you get foot traffic versus deciding that you're going to be a destination location, which I feel like choosing that location, they decided that we're going to be a place that people come to.
You'll never make it there. You won't make it. You'll sink there. That's a bad choice. Well, but they did it anyway.
And I guess first they did kind of sink there, though.
That's true.
So
literally.
Yes. So, you know, they find this location at 30 Water Street that Muldoon is happy with by now. So as I mentioned, Jack McGarry was working at Milk and Honey. I like this bit of the story, because he said that he was working at this bar, this very prominent London cocktail bar, just kind of filling the interim. And because he went from leading the bar at the Merchant to being the lowest rung on the ladder at this place. And he wasn't treated that great. He was meant to run this bar in like a private room by himself. and just was, you know, running all over the place. All of a sudden, like, he goes from being the lead cocktail designer at a prominent bar, an award-winning bar, to, like, taking orders and lighting candles and running around, like, not, you know, I'm not, like, it sounds like he has experienced, a lot of us have experienced going into a restaurant, having to prove ourselves and kind of being treated like shit in the process. And I like the positive angle he takes on it, where he says he learned two important lessons from that. And that was the importance of speed, that he learned how to shave off seconds from how to make a cocktail just a second quicker, like how to line up your bottles, how to organize your bar so you can just move a little bit faster. And the other thing he learned was how not to run a bar, which is all I'll say about that, because I'm not going to insult a world famous bar any more than that. But so he was fed up with that. He like bopped around in like a couple different cocktail companies for a while. And then ultimately he just came to New York and was like, let's do this. We're either doing this or we're not. Can we do this? So by then, like, they, you know, together decide on the location, and they decide on an opening date. And that opening date was going to be in November of 2012 in New York City. Now, if you lived in New York in 2012, you might know something else that happened in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
That was Hurricane Sandy.
And Hurricane Sandy put that part of New York underwater.
Absolutely underwater. And this is pretty heartbreaking stuff. Hurricane Sandy flooded. We're talking about, like, South Street Seaport was decimated. And that this is not far from there. So a lot of restaurants in this area, there was a little strip of restaurants that they were kind of basing their business off of. And a lot of those places, they were, like, decade-long institutions that were closed and they were gone for good. They'd just been ruined and they couldn't return financially. A bit of grace for the Dead Rabbit is while they were pretty far along on their build-out, they weren't far enough along that their basement was fully finished, so they could just pump out their basement and wipe it down and they were good to go. They didn't lose food, they didn't lose product, they didn't lose equipment. Like, of all the areas, of all the bars in that neighborhood that just kind of got decimated, they actually were behind enough in their preparations.
Yeah. And there was extensive woodwork that they've done in there, too. The bars and the woodwork in there are just absolutely beautiful. Those weren't there yet, I guess, and have those in. But now you're talking about a building that was well over, I'd say, 100 years old.
Oh, yeah, the building itself, yeah.
So that's another thing, is you had to worry about, can a structure like that withstand the flooding? When you're talking about a building that's over a century old, and it did.
Yeah, it was an old counting house at the turn of the century. So, mm-hmm. You know, started out as
Scrooge was there counting his money.
Yeah, so the building's been there for the building is historical. The bar feels like it's been there for 100 years, but it's actually has super not.
Right. Because it finally got to open in 2013.
Yes. It opened on February 12th, 2013. Interestingly enough, it was that's the birthday of both Old Smoke Morrissey himself, the leader of the Dead Rabbits, and mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln, which I think goes back to their idea once again of bringing together, you know, this combination of two things. We're going to combine American cocktail bartending with Irish pub sensibilities. We're going to combine, like, our culture with the culture we're moving to. We've got mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln and John Morrissey born on the same day, and this is the day we open. It's, just really iconic opening date.
Yeah. And the only way they could finish off 2013 was by proving once again that they were the best.
Yep. So a few months later, down in NOLA, they were nominated again. Dead Rabbit was nominated again for a bunch of awards. Best bartender, best bar program, best menu, best bar, and almost everything they were nominated for, they swept. Jack McGarry was named the best bartender in the world. The bar was named the best bar in the world. And I love, like, the idea of their name, the Dead Rabbit, and then, like, what the Dead Rabbit gangs stood for, which was Irish immigrants in America. And the idea of, like, this bar award that was dominated by New York bars. So here are some Irish boys, opened a bar in New York City, won like these awards, dominated this award category as Irish immigrants to America.
Plus, they had Leonardo DiCaprio on their side, so you had to root for them.
I mean, I don't know if that really worked in their favor. I think it was their bar menu that might.
Cameron
have done
Diaz,
it.
She was on their side too.
Yeah, well,
she was a pickpocket, but yeah. Still, she was on their side.
That was one thing I was reading about, like, how the Dead Rabbits operated, like, how they, their various schemes in the city. And one was, like, they would, they would offer to carry your luggage for you. So if you're fresh off the boat and you look kind of rich, they'd offer to carry your luggage to your hotel for you, and they'd steal your luggage. And then the hotel you were going to was at just a place where they'd hold you up and take whatever else you got. So they said specifically that that was not a form of hospitality that they incorporated into the Dead Rabbit. But that hospitality thing, I do think, is worth noting once again that when they were all this time, they had to kind of sit around and work out what kind of bar they were going to open. I feel like it's a lot of encountering the bars they didn't want to run, as I mentioned briefly with like Jack McGarry's story. But even like, you know, Muldoon, when he was kind of drinking around in New York City, seeing like the difference between hospitable bartenders and inhospitable bartenders, like made that a point of, like, he made that not just like, you know, bartend with your own personality. He made that a requirement at the Dead Rabbit. Like, we want people to be welcome here. We want you to like to talk to people. We want you to have that personality that makes you likable. That we want you to listen to people and like remember their faces. And I that feels baked in even to this day. So when we entered the Dead Rabbit, I mean, we're talking, you know, years later, like, I guess I was going to say it's been not that long, I guess, but still, like, they've gone through a couple changes in staff since they opened.
Sure, 8 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, when we went in there, everybody was great. The hostess, the waitress that we had, she was great. The food was fantastic. We each had a favorite drink that we got that we're going to try to reenact on the video.
It feels like vaguely disrespectful. I hope nobody thinks it's disrespectful, because we just tried some cocktails that we thought were really good, but they are not out in any of the bar manuals that are out yet. So I just stumbled around and tried to do my best at reinterpreting them at home, because it's safer to drink at home right now. But ultimately, the best version of the drink, I think we both agree, is at the bar.
Oh, yeah. But you did a good job. But the ones at the bar were just outstanding. And then, from my own standpoint, one of the really nice parts was they seated us in a spot where I had like my own personal bathroom. So whenever I'm drinking Guinness, you know, in cocktails, that's a good bonus for me.
Yeah, well, that's what I don't want to say that I don't support indoor dining right now, because I know it's essential for restaurants to have them, but I'm still kind of skittish about it. But luckily they have a speakeasy that really doesn't comfortably sit more than like one, maybe two groups of people, but we were in there by ourselves, so we did have an isolated dining room that I navigated for us at a time, which felt like, you know, like a okay place to sit in.
Yeah, it was great. We didn't even have a full-time waitress or bartender in there. They just kind of would slide in seemingly right when we needed them and yep, get us our drinks and slide back out.
But it really is. I mean, the story behind the bar. I think supporting people that have worked that hard to do what they do, have dedicated so much of their life to being the knowledgeable creators that they are. Like, you gotta respect that. Like, and that's really the story of the Dead Rabbit. You know, sometimes you go in cocktail bars and you don't know if you're just getting somebody that has a lot of style and like a lot of money behind them. These dudes didn't have a lot of money. They never did. They never had a lot. Like, they had a lot of fanfare, but it's not like they didn't come in with like a $1 million budget. They came in just being like, we're trying to prove ourselves with our reputations alone. And we made our reputations with our knowledge. Mm-hmm. Like, we made this with our hard work. You got to respect that. And I think even through the rebranding, even through like the extension of Dead Rabbit, it's a lot more corporate now. It's a lot more, like, you know, worldly known. It's still, you know, if you get the food, if you get the drinks, they have a great to-go program that if you're in New York, I recommend their to-go menu, absolutely. But, like, you're getting the real deal. You're getting the product of decades of knowledge.
And if you're looking for a top-notch spot to go, that is the spot to go.
Yeah. So that's, once again, that's the down on 30 Water Street, right? Yeah. That was it.
I don't know. I was just walking.
Okay. Yeah. So when the world reopens, you know what? We're close enough now that we can dangle this like a carrot on a stick in front of you.
Dead rabbit carrot.
Yeah.
Is that what you're going for?
Then you can maybe add Dead Rabbit to your list of places that you want to go someday. They're new rebranding. They got this really cool, like, their old school like branding was all looked like a member of the Dead Rabbit's gang.
Yeah.
But their new is more like this stark red and black, like kind of comic book character, like
Look like Donnie, that rabbit in Donnie Darko.
It's like a guy with a rabbit head, like a muscular dude with a rabbit head. A little furry feeling there, but that's fine. They have like a lot of their menus they've redone with like comic book style.
Mm-hmm.
Their old school menus felt super old school. Now they have this like whole comic book thing going. They have action figures and stuff. They actually gotten a, I thought this was a fun bit of tidbit, because I'm a big fan of Image Comics. And I guess Image Comics came out with a comic called Dead Rabbit, and it was about this superhero that was like an old Boston gang dude that like was known as Dead Rabbit. And the Dead Rabbit sued Image because they had already trademarked that for comic use, and they were using the Dead Rabbit idea in like these comic book style menus. So they sued Image and they won and got got the whole Dead Rabbit comic like taken off the stands, like done.
So then they made Deadpool?
No.
Oh.
No, Deadpool was already around for a while.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Deadpool was before that.
Yeah.
But
I would have done Dead Bunny.
Dead Rabbit just changed it to Dead Bunny. I don't know if Dead Bunny is quite as scary as
what
Dead.
What about Bad Bunny? Isn't that a Bad Bunny? Is that
I think,
a thing?
No, that is a thing, but not a comic book thing. I mean, I don't know. Like, I like Image Comics and I like Dead Rabbit, but like, I do think that Dead Rabbit idea was definitely around before the comic, and you know, they had that license, so I don't know, do what you want. And the branding is good.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, so that's been a rundown of, I don't know how many of these we'll get to do, but I think this is good for every now and then. If we find a bar around the world that we think is specific that you should know about, we'll tell you about it.
Not that we get around the world much, but
no, I know. This is probably
at least I got to New York.
This is one of these for a while, but I thought it was good to do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thanks, Taylor, for having me. I mean, and not just on the show, but here in New York.
You're here.
Hosting me in your apartment.
Yeah. Thank you for our Patreon members. You guys support us. You buy our booze. You support our broadcasting technology. You guys are great. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can find us there. If you want to find us on social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to email us, ask us your questions, you can email us at neattheboozecast@gmail.com. If you want to join our Facebook group,
we're at Neat the Boozecast. And if you want directions to the Dead Rabbit, Google it.
There you go. it's there. Yeah. If you know what, like right now, if you're in the New York area, get some takeout. They've got great bottled cocktails. They've got great food to go. And when you're fully vaccinated, when it is safe to travel, please, please visit New York City, and please make it an essential stop on your travels to go to the Dead Rabbit.
They pour a beautiful pint of Guinness.
They're also that. I mean, as we mentioned, their cocktail program is top-notch, but also their beer program, their spirits program, their music is good.
Absolutely. Everything's great. You'll love it.
Yeah. All right. So, hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
And I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been Neat.
Well, right here in good old New York, we did it together. Don't worry about sending me that file. I already got it.
Yeah, it's right here. I don't have to do anything. It's great.
That's right. It's all under control.